The stats, the salt, the sanity. And every so often, they talk about sports, too.
Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
I'm a little hurt right now. Like, Jay, you don't take your headphones off when I'm playing music. Like, that's a no-no. We don't do that here. We're all adults, presumably.
No. I demanded the Michigan State fight song, and now I've got nonconformity, alien ant farm, or Sum 41, whatever it is. I'm mad.
None of those things were right. By the way, I tell you what, Jay, I'll make you a fair deal. When your title on this show is host and executive producer, meaning you hit the buttons, you can play the fight song every time coming into the show. Until then, that ain't happening.
I respect that decision of yours, so I'll stand down.
Fair enough. This is Armchair Sports Talk. I am your host, Eric Eric Dorsch. That was Sergeant Salty, and as always, we have the stat man, Russ Ivanek. Russ, you didn't seem to be too thrilled about Fat Lip either, though.
I'm in a perpetual state of pain from this past weekend, though, which also somehow seems to have been 3 weeks ago. I don't know. Time is dilated.
Yeah, time is relative right now. We are just not moving. Lots of bad things happened this weekend. Jay's in a great mood about it. Before we get to the big upset of the weekend, we got to talk Lions football. Lions fall 41-21 to the Indianapolis Colts and Old Man River, who I did not see this coming. I thought this would be a close game. Didn't think it was going to be this kind of game. Rivers 23 of 33, 262 and 3 touchdowns. All as a team, rushed for 119. No real big receiver broke out for them. Rivers just found a way to move the ball around to everybody. On the other side, Stafford 24 of 42 for 336, 3-1. This is the stat I want to get before I keep trending down. This is the stat I want to get to. At one point, going into the third quarter, this team had 7 rushing yards. That was it. 7 rushing yards. Listen, that can't happen. Adrian Peterson, Kerryon Johnson, and Swift. My brain just completely shut off for a second. I'm looking at Justin's saran-wrapped window, and it's just throwing me off right now. Like, are you trying to keep everything
heat in?
No, are you trying to keep everything like tasty fresh in your house or something? Like, what the hell?
My man, I'm bald. A draft is very feelable for me, okay? We're going to keep it nice and tight.
I'm going to get you one of those Ebenezer Scrooge sleeping stocking caps you can wear on your head every night. And DeAndre Swift. That can't happen. These guys are – there's too much talent in that backfield for there to be 7 rushing yards at some point in the third quarter. That, like, if one of them has 7 rushing yards and only got 1 carry, okay, I can live with it. Not great. Marvin Hall, 4 catches, 113 yards. But the one I want to point out, Jay, your boy TJ Hockenson, he had a week this week. 7 receptions, 65 yards, didn't find the end zone. Sets his career high in receptions in a game. Gets a little bit above that 50-yard threshold we were talking about. Kenny Golladay obviously didn't play in this game, and it showed. Kind of want to get your guys' input. Jay, we started the segment last week, Hawk watch, so I'll let you talk about it. What did you see out of TJ Hockenson this week?
I saw what I want to see almost every week, fully knowing that this offense is not going to do that. Him getting 7 receptions, 7 receptions on 10 targets, no touchdowns, 65 yards. I place a lot of value on where we picked him in that first round, and I want him to be an integral part, and he might have to be if Galladay's not playing this weekend. So I'm happy with it. When you compare it through week 8 of last year, his catches are up, his targets are up, his completions is up. He's got twice as many touchdowns and more yards as before. So he is trending upward. I think Russ put it all into perspective for me on how quickly I should expect a return on him coming to this team. It'll be interesting. I forgot who pulled it out, but whoever notated that, compare this now to Galladay in and out. here's the good test this weekend, if Galladay is actually going to be out and how much we're going to utilize him. So I'm patiently whelmed with how he played this past week, if we're going to stick to our key terms around here. So I'm okay with it right now.
Russ, if you don't have this answer, I'll give you a break. Russ took a very, very big and important test this past weekend, so he kind of had to play catch-up for us. Like, Jay and I are texting back and forth. I thought Russ might have died. I really did. We didn't hear from him for a while.
Actually,
it's possible, but like, for those of you who don't know, when we're in this text thread, it's bang, bang, bang. There's not a lot of quiet. People, like, if we start talking, it rolls off pretty fast, and we didn't hear from Russ for a good 7-8 hours, so you get a little cautious, but obviously he had a reason. But I want to ask you, Russ, Galladay being out, did we kind of see Stafford make it apparent who his number two target is when that number one guy isn't playing in TJ Hockenson? It just seemed like almost like Amendola was last year. It seemed like Hock this year has been that guy of, if I can't make it happen, I'm just throwing it to Hock and seeing what he can do for us.
It seems to be just in the specific case of, oh shit, everything's breaking down. And yes, Hockenson's taking over from Galladay, but I think they're breaking up his roles. And then we kind of saw that in the second half of the game. Especially in Atlanta, just to illustrate my point, there was a lot of, oh shit, and he threw it, and it was a place that only Galladay could catch it, and he caught it, and he got absolutely destroyed doing so, and we talked about it here. Yeah, I think that's going to go to Hockenson. Some of the red zone looks, those went to Marvin Jones. The long looks went to Marvin Hall. This is something that didn't happen in the first two games of the season where they split these roles up. They just went, no one can do this, we're screwed, and they lost two straight games. Reminder, 3-1 when Kenny Galladay plays all four quarters. 0-3 when he doesn't. Good luck this Sunday. But no, we definitely saw it. We saw, I put together some rough numbers for it too, about a half a yard less on average, the intended air yards when Galladay is on the field or off the field. Same for the completed air yards. This attack across the board gets less potent without Galladay, not only in effectiveness, but even in how far they're attempting to throw. Marvin Hall is going to be super important to step into that to try and stretch the defense, or else we're going to see the cover one problems we saw in the first 3 weeks of the season. So, yeah, we done screwed, boys.
Yeah. It's not great. Flipping over to the other side, in this land of where all you got to do is wear a mask, and in theory you should be safe, we have Jared Davis on the list, Matt Stafford now on the list, in a little bit more of a different situation than actually testing positive. Russ, we talked about this guy last week, wasn't available for this game, would have loved to have had him for this game. How much of a difference, or how much more important is Everson Griffen this week? Division game against the Minnesota Vikings, who, oh, by the way, had a pretty good day against the Green Bay Packers. Had this guy running back, last name's Cook. I don't know if you guys have heard from him. Scored like four times against the Packers. So how important is Griffen going against his former team? Kind of knows the ins and outs of that organization.
I hope the answer is very important. Because pass rush ain't there. Trey Flowers might miss the game. Anyways, so there is a huge hole there. Hopefully Griffen and Adrian Peterson crawls back out of his cave, because he's been doing a really good Halloween impression of a skeleton recently. But hopefully they both team up against their former team and can be important. How important will he be? I'm scared we'll get the Patricia Locke on any pass rush attempt. and he won't be all that useful. It's week one. I don't expect a ton with the new team, with the new scheme.
I mean, there's a difference for me between what I want and what I'm starting to think is the reality. And it's becoming a theme with a lot of things. I think he can be huge for this team, but how is he going to be utilized? I have a fear that whenever we get something new, whenever we get a piece that we think is going to work a certain way, Patricia plays smartest man in the room. And whether that's more Bevel than Patricia or vice versa, I just feel like they think they know how to manage their players better than their players' talent actually is. Everson Griffen should be utilized around his skill set, not, well, my pencil behind my ear tells me to only play you every three snaps or something stupid like that. Like, there'd be some quantitative bullshit behind it. I hope he destroys them. I hope we need it based upon Stafford may or may not be in. Galladay may or may not be in. We need defense to play then. We got ran over all week. We had an opposing running back doing flipping backflips against us twice. And Olympians were commenting on his form. That's embarrassing. We're a footnote. We need a defensive piece like him that doesn't make us a footnote on Sunday. So he better be big. He's got to be.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
49ers have shut down practice facility due to COVID tests, scheduled to play tomorrow against the Green Bay Packers. We could have an NFL game canceled. Just saw it on the ticker as I was listening to Jay. Saw it and wanted to put it out there.
Wow.
I'm going to circle. Jay, I agree. It has reached that point now where you have to take any, you know, kind of thought you have of what it should, how it should go, and definitely dilute it, because it's likely not going to go the way you think, the way we think it's going to go. Patricia Quinn, for better or for worse, have a plan they think's going to work. 3-4 doesn't tell me it's working, but it is what it is. Before we get on to the predictions and all that, I do want to ask you both. It seems to me over the last couple weeks, we have seen more and more in the NFL of COVID tests popping up more frequently. Are we reaching a point now where the NFL might need to look at this and say, okay, we need to figure out either a way to turn this, or we need to expect that we are not getting a 16-game NFL season in? Either one of you, whoever wants.
I think we're well past that point. I think it was a week ago we hit the first point where the U.S. reported 100,000 new cases in a single day. We're way past the point where we should be looking at alternate ways to do this. So we're halfway through the season. Put 4 to 6 teams in a bubble together, find a field where you can play every third day on, and rotate through them and get through it somehow that way. You need to cut bait. It's only going to get worse right now unless measures are taken. And this is why we're here in the first place anyways, because measures weren't taken, but whatever. Yes, I think we're well past that time.
Well, I mean, just go ahead, Jay. Sorry.
No, short answer. It's complacency. A lot of people are experiencing it. People are over it. People feel like they've already done their duty when their call to duty is not done yet. First of all, I thought the 49ers got ravaged by injuries first before COVID, but that's fine. If you want to say COVID's taken them down, they were like a fraction of their own team. It's complacency. And, you know, I forgot where I heard it, but I heard someone entertaining the idea of an expanded playoff schedule to supplement loss of games. That your answer is not more ratings and money. Your answer is protective measures now. So it's complacency all around.
Look, Russ, you kind of harped on the idea I would say to go with. Take 2 weeks off, give everybody, you know, a chance to get healthy and all that, and then bubble it up, but bubble the divisions together. Packers, yeah. Bears, you know, Vikings and Lions, they go in the bubble, like you said. Put together a little round robin of you play each team 3 times if you want. So whatever, just to get to the point where we'd have a little bit of spacing to decide. Whoever comes out on top is our division champ this year. Gives everybody an equal playing field. You got to win. You got to win your games. You got to play good. You can get hot for a little bit there, as opposed to playing playing the Packers week 1 and then not seeing them again until week 16. You can kind of keep the momentum flying. And whoever comes out is our division champ. You play that many games, it's probably going to take you about 2-3 weeks to get through all of them. By then, take another couple off. You can start a bubble of playoffs. You'll have a certain amount of teams. They go into the bubble. Let's see who comes out on top, kind of like the NBA.
I would thoroughly enjoy seeing Mitch Trubisky and Nick Foles way too many times than I need to if we got to go into like a bubble with the Bears. That would be amazing.
As long as
you were a glutton for ugly play.
As long as the bubble isn't in Chicago, I'm good with it.
Yeah, no, not Soldier Field. We're bringing home.
Jay and I have been on Soldier Field. It's overrated, okay? It's not. It's nothing.
It is.
Nothing.
We were like 12 years old. Nah.
Jay, we were seniors in high school.
Mentally 12.
Yeah.
Mentally,
yes. The security guy had to literally tell us 3 times you're not allowed to step on the field. Justin wanted me to throw him a touchdown in the corner of the end zone. So, it's bad. Anyway, circling back, Lions take on the Minnesota Vikings this week. I mentioned earlier, Matt Stafford on the COVID list right now. But as Russ reported to us, on the COVID list, more for proximity and contact to someone who has tested positive. He has not tested positive, but they've got to, you know, take the precautions. Obviously, he'll get tested the next couple days. I want to ask you both, we're going to break down this game two separate ways. We're going to break this one down right now as if on Sunday, Matt Stafford steps onto the field and is the starting quarterback for the Detroit Lions against the Minnesota Vikings. Obviously, they haven't adjusted the lines for that anyway. Really not anything. There's no over-under right now, so there's no anything. Does anybody have a spread on this game? They've decided to take my spread away.
I thought I saw 4. Minus 4 Minnesota last I looked, maybe. Yeah,
I got it reloading now. So anyway, we're going to take this as a Stafford play. Stafford steps on that field for the Lions. Listen,
the spread got taken down.
Yeah, they might be reworking it because of this exact thing. So my personal opinion, this game is a loss for the Lions either way. The only way it isn't a loss is if Galladay is on the field, which it doesn't look like he will be. Because to me right now, Galladay is the, you know, whatever you want to call it, the spark, the ignition, the thing that gets this offense moving, keeps them in games. We talked about last week how he is kind of the, without comparing him to Calvin, he is the Calvin of the team. He's that guy that Stafford feels comfortable being able to go to in the clutch and know it's going to be a big play. So no Galladay and with Stafford, I just think this team's got too many question marks on offense to be able to be successful. Doesn't matter that AP's, you know, back in Minnesota, Everson Griffin back in Minnesota. That really doesn't make any difference because it doesn't really, just because you go home doesn't immediately impact the game. It adds the storyline to it, but the guy's got to play well, and I don't think that Patricia will use Griffin in the way we want him to. So that being said, I see this as I see this as probably about a 24-13 loss for the Detroit Lions.
Ooh, that would mark the first time this year we scored less than 20 points in the game. We did it 7 times last year. I can't erase me knowing a stat. Mm-hmm. Stuck in there.
Nope. Go ahead, Jay.
So I think either or, we lose. I'm going to talk about a couple of game predictions and then my convictions that I'm marking in the sand right now for the rest of the season. Delvin Cook, he just did a thing last week, and I'd be interested to find out what's the record of most rushing touchdowns consecutive games. Like, X amount of touchdowns in game one, X amount of touchdowns in game two, or just taking a two-game sample size, what's the record of rushing touchdowns for a running back?
Most rushing touchdowns in a two-game sample.
That would be a great way to phrase it, and I'm glad you're here.
I'm just trying to make sure I know what I'm looking up later.
I would love to know what that is. He's at 4. The most in a game is 6, which I have no idea who even did it. I just looked at the stat and moved on. But I would suspect that Cook does it again. We just got ran on, and we couldn't run the ball ourselves. Some of my convictions, I believe the running attack for the Lions will be their downfall. I said it a couple weeks ago. AP wasn't even there. We barely ran the ball against Indy. I don't know what we're going to do against Minnesota. My biggest conviction of all is I'm starting to learn that this team, Stafford will go down as a calm, confident, and loyal quarterback to the Lions, but it will be quarterbacking a team that can never sustain their own riches. And we lose Galladay. We had Kelvin. It's kind of been like the theme of the Lions. I mean, we had a great running attack with AP. Now he's non-existent. We don't know really what we're going to get out of Swift every week. Hockenson's hit or miss. The game planning is interesting. It's kind of doom and gloom, and I think that might be the Lions we get this weekend. We're not going to beat the Atlanta Falcon Lions. We're going to get this interesting bag of nuts that doesn't make sense, and we'll lose 27-31.
So it's going to be a close game. It's just going to be a loss game.
I think the spread at the time was like 45.5 or something in the mid 40s. I'll take the over. And then I'm going to have the Lions losing 27-31.
Okay.
Okay. I share in all of your lack of optimism. I think it's a loss either way. I mean, I mentioned the Galladay thing earlier about 3-1 when he plays the full game, 0-3 when he doesn't. But the numbers I want to focus on, 6.6, 5.9, 3.4, 3.3, 2.7, 2.6, 1.4. No, that's not our hope in the season.
No, that sounds like my GPA as I went from elementary school into high school.
As I started adding letters to math, that was the GPA track.
Yeah. Yep.
No, that's Adrian Peterson's chronological yards per carry every week. So this moribund rushing attack is going to pin its hopes on AP coming home as he's crumbling into the dirt. Eventually, hopefully, he's got a little bit more in the tank, but we're going to find out this week. And if there's been 7 weeks of sample to tell us, it's not been great. The best thing the Lions have going for them is they get to play Kirk Cousins, who has 10 interceptions on the year, but it won't be enough. With or without Galladay, it's a loss. I got 27-24 with Stafford. I've got 30-13 without him.
Ooh.
That's actually the interesting point I wanted to touch on. We all gave predictions here, but I want to ask you guys both. I mean, Lions fans, beat writers, you know, for the most part, seemed pretty happy when we heard that Chase Daniel was going to be the backup. We had a real backup who had NFL experience. Been a while since we've had that, Jay. Kind of your perception. Lions have always made other teams' backups look really good in games. Chance that maybe Daniel having time to kind of learn this offense, be a part of it every day, work with Stafford, work with Bevel, who we've had great things to say about. Chance that maybe Chase Daniel can come out and, I'm not saying a win, I'm saying keep them in a game, and for once a Lions backup quarterback looks good?
Well, see, now you're just implying that we actually have a plan of attack with a backup quarterback. I think we only have about 15 plays of Matt. I'm not going to lie to you, I forgot about Chase Daniel. And off the cuff, I mean, I'd hope so, but something tells me that like we have a set amount of plays, and then it's going to be just toss it up to whoever might be deep or check down and go. Like, I have zero confidence in the backup quarterback plan. Last year, the theme was we're on ice, very thin ice with Stafford, and if Stafford goes, the ice cracks, and we all fall into the water. Same story this year for me.
Yeah, I don't think it's a sure loss just because he's coming in there like we had with, like, Blau. But it's, if I was taking him to lose with Stafford, I'm sure as shit not going to be more confident with him out of it.
Okay. Before we move on to college football, obviously Lions have already had their bye. So after this game, we will officially be through 8 games for the Lions. We will have seen half their season. Obviously 3-4, we're predicting 3-5. Kind of a midway bench point, I kind of want to ask you both. Russ, you first. 3-5, we all kind of predicted this to be a good season for the Lions. Doesn't look that way. Give me a second half prediction looking at the record as is.
Just steal from Clever Lang again. Pain. That's my prediction for the second half. I wouldn't be surprised if it's the same. Without going through the schedule, 3-5 feels right again to another 6-10 finish. Finish in the middle of the pack and highlight how there is talent, and we're going to add talent, but unless the utilization of talent changes, nothing else is going to. And it's, you're stuck in this quagmire of being completely inflexible with your approach, rushing four, always, dropping deep all the damn time. These corners are challenged more deep than any other corner in the league right now, 15.3% of the time. You got to change something or it's always going to be the same. So I'm going to pick it to be the same. 3-5.
Okay. We're not going to obviously break down every game because we do that week to week, but for those who don't know, after this week it goes Washington at Carolina, here for Houston, go to Chicago, back here for Green Bay, to Tennessee, Tampa comes here, Minnesota comes here to finish the season.
I just did 2-6 in my head.
Okay.
I mean, I don't want to always to be doom and gloom. I would like to think at the end of the year, if we're going to be a subpar team who's just floating in the middle, who has assets that are mismanaged. Which, by the way, someone was complaining that we shouldn't be calling players assets this week. Like, I feel like that's a taboo word now. I don't know if you saw that. People thought it was not respectful. So now every time I say assets, I feel like I'm offending someone. Regardless, if we get stuck in this middle, I'd really like to think that maybe that would push the GM and the coach out where we still have good pieces where someone else can manage this team. Like that's my saving grace for this, is that we're not terrible like the Jets where they have to find new everything. We're obviously not going to the playoffs, but hopefully someone can acquire what we have and build off of it. So that's like my only thing I think I have going for me right now.
It's fair. It is fair. I think I'm going to complete the cycle here. Justin said 2-6. Russ said 3-5. I think 4-4. I think we look at a 500 back end. Hopefully Kenny gets healthy. I think we see more growth and stride out of Hockenson to realize that he's capable of being a big Ten end in this league. But the thing I think we're going to have to see eventually, because AP is showing he's never going to get it done anymore. He's just kind of reached his point. They seem to have lost all faith in Kerryon. Is eventually Patricia's going to have to walk onto that sideline with the intent that we drafted him in the second round. We have him here. It's time to let Swift loose. Let him be the number one back, and let's see what we get out of him. It's kind of like with the Miami Dolphins started Tua last week, because they said, we need to see what we have. We've got picks. We need to know, is this our quarterback to build around, or do we need to start kind of looking at quarterbacks again? Obviously, Tua didn't have a ball-out day. I mean, only threw for 98 yards, but still played well. Team found a way to get the win in other facets. So I think that still remains to be seen, but we need to be doing that with Swift. Obviously, Swift is not a top five pick, but he is the back. He is the guy that's probably going to be the back. So I say 4-4, and those four losses are probably going to be against bigger teams, but they're going to be games where we are trying to figure out what we have on this field, whether it's Patricia and Quinn preparing for the next year, which I don't think they get, or it's just the Ford family realizing, okay, here's what we have. We need to find a coach that agrees with us, and we can start building the plan moving forward. So I say 4-4, finishes at a 7-9 year, like you guys said. Not making the playoffs unless you're in, you know, a division with the Cowboys and the Eagles, and 4-12 gets you into the playoffs. So it's crazy. Yeah, this is not a fun year to be a Detroit Lions fan, but it hasn't been for the last 50 years. So we will see. Jay, are you ready to talk a little Spartan football?
Oh, I totally forgot we won. Yeah, let's do that.
No, you didn't, you lying.
Jay's Michigan State Spartans defeated our Wolverines 27-24. Now, before we break it down and get into it, I just want to ask you, Jay, late in the game, when it did start getting a little bit closer, was there any part of you that just thought, well, we did good for a while, but here we go?
I believe I felt that after the second time we stopped you in the first quarter. I was like, great, like, end of the game. We had two drives that we stalled. Oh, look at this. They're running the Wildcat after they drove for 80 yards. We're getting lucky. Like, that was in the beginning. I thought that was all I was getting, and it changed.
Thoughts on Rocky Lombardi after this? Listen, this is a game that should endear a guy to Spartan fans. I mean, 17-32, 323, and 3 touchdowns.
0 turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
I you know what? No, I think this is more Mel Tucker than Rocky. I do not have faith in Rocky Lombardi still, and that's not me trying to blow air into your ears right now and be all hot takey. I've never liked him. I don't like him. Russ is blowing air through the visuals right now. No one else can see it, but I love it. I don't have faith in it. I mean, you can't go from the 7 turnovers to 0 turnovers. I didn't like some of the play calling, which I know is not Rocky's fault, but when it's 3rd and long and we're running and we get 2 or 3 yards just a punt, we did that twice against Michigan. We, bottom line it, got lucky and exposed a weakness, and you're welcome, Big Ten. We showed you Michigan's weakness, and we exploited it for 1 week. I will not sit here and try to crown Rocky Lombardi as the next, Connor Cook, Cousins, fill in the blank. He's not my quarterback.
I was impressed because of the no turnovers part. I wasn't ready for that. And they attacked deep into this Michigan offense and exploited a lot of the pass defense. They had, what was it, 7? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 plays of more than 26 yards. I mentioned 26 because that was the longest Michigan play of the entire game. 5 of those were pass attempts. Rocky Lombardi stretched this defense and exploited something that Minnesota couldn't have, didn't a week ago. So I was impressed. Maybe this isn't every week, Rocky, but Rocky's got a chance against Drago now.
Yeah, this isn't every week, Rocky. It definitely isn't, but this is the kind of guy that you want in a season like this. You guys aren't, like, you beat us. You beat us. I can't really, like, put you down any more than that, but you guys, Spartan fans, just as much as Wolverines fans, no, Spartans aren't really going to go anywhere this year. They got their big win. They'll probably squeak out a couple other ones, but for the most part, this is a building year. That's something you want to see, is a quarterback who's going to play all out the entire time, because it means next year, when you guys build a little more, you got a guy who's, you know, has no, you know, slowdown setting. He's pedal to the metal at all times. And listen, 323 and three touchdowns, Jay, if you are upset with that, we need to have a conversation about your expectations of a quarterback.
Well, hang on. I'm in no way am I upset. I just know I'm driving a rental car. I just know
all college players are rental cars, Jay. There's no life contracts.
In the context of this season, he is a rental, and my car is in the shop that I want as my quarterback. So Rocky, I think, in the third quarter, decided to, oh, God, I'm under pressure, and all I've done is thrown duds. So he decided to run it, and he went for like 5 or 6 yards. And when he ran, he slid. I'm sorry. When Michigan State played Michigan a couple years ago, I believe it was Connor Cook, he led with his shoulder and took a hit to extend the play. Rocky slid. He is my rental car right now.
All right. You might hear the first argument we've ever had on this show, because I want to go into this. This is kind of getting me. Saying the car is in the shop implies you already own the car, which means that car is already sitting on, like, the car is already purchased for you, owned it. So I want to know, who's in the shop in East Lansing that isn't playing right now over Rocky Lombardi? Because if you're going to use that analogy, the better way to say it is you're waiting for the lease to end, and then you're going to go buy the new car, meaning you're the other guy, you haven't even signed for that new car yet, which means he's not there, not ready to go. So I want to know, who the heck is not better than Rocky Lombardi and not playing right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's simple. Tua's brother is going to transfer out of... It was a bad analogy. I don't have a car. I have a bicycle, and I need to buy a car eventually. How about that?
If everything you're doing is
sorry.
I want you to know this.
I'm not going to take it back. He does not look good under pressure. Turnovers were disgusting.
Russ, will you at least help me here? Like, come on. Like, this is just...
I was impressed with Rocky.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what to tell you here. Yes, they're all rental cars, but, like, he's going to... Actually, he can't be around for too much longer, right?
I'm jacking.
No, this is his third season with us, I believe.
He is a junior.
Okay. So,
not
yeah,
likely going
year.
To be an NFL quarterback after this year, so you know he's your quarterback for this year and probably next year, unless some guy has a big camp.
So what do you do with the rental car? You buy the insurance, and you have some fun with it, and you enjoy driving someone else's car for a while. Enjoy the win. Enjoy that he did well. Embrace it.
You know, to that point, I did have someone tell me this week that I need to stop focusing on negative stuff and now and again sprinkle in a positive comment. I did that with my Lions. I'm not doing it with
Sergeant Salty. You're like, we want this. If we didn't, we would tell you to lighten up. Listen, Jay, I can tell you what a bad quarterback sounds like. It sounds like 32 of 51 for 300 yards, no touchdowns. Oh, and by the way, he's your leading rusher on a team that has multiple backs who should be capable of running the ball more effectively than they did. That's Joe Milton. Russ, we talked about Rocky. We talked about this state team. We got to flip the spotlight over. And I have to ask you, because I, for the life of me, I can't figure it out. I need to know what the hell Jim Harbaugh saw in Joe Milton that made him think, yeah, this is the guy over Dylan McCaffrey.
Well, it was and we kind of touched on it last week, that it was the, we're going to run a lot, but this guy's going to make you think we might pass. Well, that doesn't work when, A, you just always pass to the same area over and over and over 52 times. 52 attempts.
Oh, 51. Yeah, 51. Let's not get carried away.
Sorry. The other one was Hassan Haskins because that was point B. What's the point of having a running quarterback who's a threat to throw and then run the wildcat? You're already doing the wildcat as your base. That's the point. Lombardi had as many attempts as Milton had completions, and Lombardi had more yards. That's 5.9 average on his completed passes. That's horrendous. That was almost as bad as the running game, which was 4.5 yards per carry, and that wasn't very good. Holy shit. This was a struggle to watch this offense do the exact same thing over and over and over. You can only be successful with this kind of offense in the quote-unquote unpredictability that he likes, that Milton brings, if you run the ball well. And they didn't. And you have to be unpredictable with your passing, which they weren't. So I understand the words that he was saying that led him to the conclusion. This game called that all into question.
Two moments where Russ just said, holy shit, and I also said holy shit on Saturday, and they kind of go into this unpredictability. First of all, when Ben Mason is out there, there's only a couple things Ben Mason's going to do. Like, I'm not surprised by Ben fucking Mason. He doesn't do anything for me.
No.
And then I think it was the second quarter, but you had like an 80 to 90 yard drive down the field, which ended in a wildcat, which resulted into a field goal. I was like, you worked your ass off to get that far to do that? You're going to put Milton on the sideline? I was just like, what are we doing? I also said, holy shit, for you guys, because I felt bad, because that did not look good.
No, it did not look good. listen, this is the thing, and I've been saying this since the day they named him there. Harbaugh is not the guy. Harbaugh was the guy to kind of start riding the ship back in the direction we needed to go. He was Michigan's Michigan man. We brought in a former player who played with Bo, and him and Bo were friends. And listen, I am a diehard U of M fan. Bo Schembechler has not been a part of the Michigan program since before we were born. Okay? That's fantastic. That's great. He's good. That would be like saying UCLA's new basketball coach needs to be a Wooden man. He needs to be a John Wooden man. Guess what? At some point, we have to move on from that, and we have to hire someone to coach this team who does not have a tie to Michigan, okay? The most tie the next guy needs to have is that during a weekend of having fun, he banged one of the cheerleaders at some point, and then he went back to his own college. That's where I sit with this right now, because we are reaching this point as a Michigan fan, Russ. I can't handle this Michigan man thing anymore, and I want to ask you, though. End of this year, keep going the way it is. Is Jim Harbaugh the head coach of the Michigan Wolverines come March?
I think he will be until he wants to leave. I don't think he should be. I think you're exactly right that the Michigan man thing is overplayed, and it should not be the consideration for who's the most qualified coach coming up next. I will say the fornication habits or preferences of any coach, do not care. Please don't bring that into the decision process. But you only need to look as far as the two Harbaugh brothers to see what's going wrong here. Jim is still trying to run Bo's offense. John recreated a brand new offense to fit around Lamar Jackson. One of them has a Super Bowl trophy. You need a coach that wants to be flexible and embrace what's coming next and what could be. And we don't have it right now with Jim Harbaugh.
See, I need the football mentality of Jim Harbaugh and Bo and all that, but I need the creation process, and this is going to sound bad because it was terrible when he was here, the creation and ways of making this happen of Rich Rod. You need that guy who's not afraid to say, see this? This is what you did for the last 100 years. Goodbye. We're going to try this. You have the talent. We've got enough talent on that field that you can shape things around. I personally think Milton is a guy you need to get on the move. Listen, we don't have any big, stable, like workhorse receivers. We've got a bunch of slot receivers. Get this guy out moving, get him on crossing patterns and outs, and let's just chip away at the field and score touchdowns. You don't need to be one big play, 20 plays of nothing, and then one more big play. Just chip away at it, wear the defense down, keep them on the field for a long time, and you're going to find ways to win these football games, Ross.
Hopefully. Hopefully you do. The problem is they tried to just move and chip little by little, and they ended up just getting a bunch of 5-yard gains, 6-yard gains, and never really trying to do anything else. So you're completely going against all the unpredictability and speed and space bullshit that we've been fed for months leading up to the season. It's the very first play, with a little pitch to Corum, I was like, oh, speed and space, it's her! A week later, it was gone. It may never come back.
We want to make predictions, but real quick, Jay, we weigh in on State, so we have to let you weigh in on U of M. Come March, is Jimmy still wearing those khakis on the U of M sideline?
I don't know the process, and even if it was like in the job description of the AD to hire and fire the coach, I don't know what the boosters are doing. I don't know what the board of trustees are involved, if they're even involved. I don't know who's responsible for it. Whoever it is, they need to take a page out of Milton's book, where Milton pretend like he didn't know who Anton Simmons was. I need whoever's in charge of hiring and firing at Michigan to stop listening to the media and pretend like they don't exist, because I think it weighs in their decisions, and I think he'll still be the coach. Michigan State wins, and all I hear is, well, Michigan needs to do this and that and this and that. All this is just placating to Harbaugh staying in Ann Arbor. So he will still be the head coach.
Well, but you got to look. I think you could almost look at it in the comparison of you guys. This time last year, we were talking about it, and you personally were starting to get a little worn down on D'Antonio.
Yeah.
Because you guys are in the situation we are, the difference is D'Antonio did what he needed to do, but then he's had 4-5 years of not really doing it anymore. They were competitive, but kind of like U of M, they lost the games they needed to win to keep it sustainable. So we are a year behind you. The difference is Harbaugh doesn't have, because I heard this the other day, and this drove me crazy. Harbaugh has never won a division title as a D1 head coach. When he was at San Diego Correct. State, they were D2. So that means Stanford with Andrew Luck and Toby Gerhart and all these great talents never won one in the Pac-12.
Yep.
The Pac-freaking-12, people. USC has literally had the death sentence since we were in middle school. How are you not at least getting this done? Coming over here, I mean, he made it to the Super Bowl, but Russ, you pointed out, he lost to the better Harbaugh brother. So. Yep. Still never forget watching that game when the lights went out. Oh, God. Okay. Anyway, so that's what I'm saying. He's never won a division title as a D1 head coach, but he's touted as this big D1 coach. And listen, I'm a U of M fan. I just don't get it. I have reached that point now where all the like hype and all that is not being matched by what we're getting on the field. We're getting a D3 result for a D out of a D1 head coach, and that can't happen anymore.
it's rough. I keep hearkening back to I climbed a tree to get a kicker, and I slept over for Quinn Nordine, and like signing with Stars, and like all the goofy shit that people are like, oh, that's just Jim being Jim. Now it's like, but we haven't been to Indy, and that's going to be the bottom line of his story. Like that's open and closed Harbaugh book.
Well, it's like with any diva, right? Like you can be quirky and weird and strange if you're winning.
Yeah, I agree.
100%.
It's just tough. All right, it's a tough situation, and unfortunately, all the things we need to get done just aren't getting done, and it's starting to show. There's cracks in the armor, and it's a question of how long can we go before it reaches a point of no return. Because the last thing you want is for a guy who his whole life has been revered at U of M and has such a tie to this school, for this to end in the worst way possible of having to fire a head coach and burning the bridge like that. You just don't want that. You really don't. Moving on, we have to make predictions for this week. Michigan State, we'll go first with that one, Jay. Michigan State plays Iowa. And listen, I think you guys are going to have to, you know, really, really, really ride the momentum from this previous win, because this Iowa team is a good football team, in my opinion. The record doesn't show it, but I see them as a good football team. They're always competitive, always seem to be there. 76% favorites in this, so clearly the odds makers agree with me. Spread is 6.5, over under 46.5. Jake, can Rocky Lombardi keep it going, another 300, three-touchdown game?
I don't think he comes close to that stat line, but I think Vegas does happen to agree with you. How is a winless Iowa team a 6.5-point favorite? That, I mean, okay, give me MSU. I'll take my Spartans. Like I do not understand that logic. So yeah, I'm going to take Spartans for a win. I think they're going to win 27-16. I think we're going to establish some ground game in this game. I think that's going to be more important than trying to hit up White again or Naylor and keep trying to do that on corners. I think Iowa has a little bit better of a defense. I also don't have any space – or Jesus, let me try that again. I don't have any faith in Spencer Petraeus. I believe that's how it's pronounced. He's worse than Rocky. All right, he took like a snap 2 years ago and played maybe 11 snaps last year. He's a rookie in my mind. So I think we will out-duel their quarterback as long as our O-line will give Rocky at least a chance. That's all I wanted against Michigan. Give Rocky a chance to be my rental car. Keep him upright. Let him do his thing. I think we'll take down Iowa. So I'm going with that, 27-16, Michigan State.
All righty. Russ, over to you.
Okay. I'll say it this way. This all depends on Rocky Lombardi, and I don't know if that scares or comforts anybody. But if you give week two Lombardi, Michigan State should win this game. Iowa isn't just winless. They're winless against Purdue and Northwestern. Again, Purdue. Lost Purdue. that's just 60 more seconds of that. I'll save you the time. I got 24-21 because I think Lombardi and Ricky White come back to earth a little bit. We saw peak from them last week. Dialed down the expectation a little bit into something a little more reasonable, probably still good. I don't think you're putting Ricky White back in the bottle here. They discovered, oh, that's a dangerous weapon. But it's not quite enough in Iowa. If it was in East Lansing, I might have a little bit of a different tune here.
Okay. Look, I think we're going to definitely see MSU coming out there with a lot of confidence. Listen, the 1-1 team, Lombardi played good. Ricky White's been doing good. Mel Tucker gets his first win, so he's comfortable. This is now his team. He's got the win. This is his team. But I think that this is one of those times where the records aren't going to reflect what we get. I see this as Iowa doing what Iowa does. They just seem to always consistently play, get through games, get W's when they need to. And that's going to happen this week. I see this as a 20, in all honesty, about a 27 to kind of my Lions pick, 27 to 13. I think Rocky has a decent game, but I think you're going to see Rocky go from a big rivalry game where you're hyped up to just a game where he can't manage to keep what he had going. So 27-13, Iowa Hawkeyes. Flipping over to the other side, we got the Michigan Wolverines. And yes, Jay, we can make it to Indiana because we're going to Indiana to play them. So get over
yourself. Enjoy Bloomington.
Get over
yourself. Enjoy Bloomington.
Yeah, get over yourself. Playing the Indiana Hoosiers, 2-0 team. Questionable 2-0. If you didn't see their last second win against Penn State, where did the guy get in? Did he not? Who knows? Whatever. Yeah. Questionable, but listen, the record's the record. I can't take it away from him. 56% favorite on this one. So obviously Michigan not looking too good. Spread's only 3.5, so they expect it to be close. Over under 54, they're not looking for a lot of defense here. I'm going to go first here. I think this is that game where we're going to see Harbaugh do what he should have done against Michigan State, but he's going to do it against Iowa. He's going to tighten everything up. He's going to go in there and have an offense that he should have taken against Michigan State that would have been effective. Going to set Milton up for success. And I see this as about a three-point game. I see this as 27-24 Michigan over Indiana, Russ.
I cannot in good conscience watch what just happened and pick Michigan to win a game against a higher-ranked opponent. I also have a three-point game. I have 31-28 Indiana, but this might be the best Indiana defense we've seen. in our lifetimes. Anyways, they forced at least 2 interceptions in both of their games. That's going to be the key here. It's not going to come down to the run game because, hey, Michigan's rush D is good. Indiana's rush offense is non-existent. They don't care. They don't run the ball very well. 75 yards per game, so you're not taking away anything from them. It's going to be the passing game on both sides. If Milton can hang on to the ball, then we got a chance to talk different. I think we end up losing the turnover, too. That ends up being the difference, 31-28, Indiana.
Okay.
Damn khakis.
Well, you're going to be by yourself on this, my friend, because I'm actually going to take Michigan to win.
I too
am playing with the line here. I've got Michigan winning 24-21. I was going to go with the feelings aspect of Michigan couldn't, or Harbaugh could not get Michigan ready for Michigan State. Oddly enough, I think he's going to do it against Indiana, only to just drive the point that he's going to lose to his rivals and the records will be inflated and people look at numbers. Well, he won all these games while he was the coach. Yeah, against who? Yeah, Indiana got a last-second win against Penn State. Welcome to 2020. So I'm going to give it to Michigan by the smallest of margins, 24-21.
All right. Well, Russ, it really bothers me that a Spartan went with me, but a fellow Wolverine couldn't do it. So
I am in a perpetual state of pain. I don't know how to tell you this differently.
Leave this man alone.
Yeah, I know. I feel so bad. All right. Those are our predictions. Obviously, recap them next week. Hopefully, we have a good week of football. First time, this time around, we don't have to worry about two of our teams clashing with each other. Let's get 3 straight wins, guys. It'd be awesome. Let's really be happy for next week. Probably won't happen. We'll probably be talking about 0-3, but at the same time, it'd be good. NBA draft just a couple weeks away. Lately, there's been some speculation, some talk that LaVar Ball, son or father of LaMelo Ball, father of Lonzo Ball, now plays for the Pelicans, obviously with the Lakers, has come out with statements that he wants his son, LaMelo, who's projected to be a top pick in this draft, to go to either the New York Knicks, fingers crossed, or here, the Detroit Pistons. Now, obviously, this man has no say whatsoever in what happens, because if he did, he would have never let his son go play for, if I'm using his words correctly, a weak-ass head coach like Bill Walton in the L.A. So I'm kind of going to ask you guys, we've got the draft coming up. We've all kind of given our picks on where we want to see the Pistons go. How much weight, how much stock, how likely do you really see it that these Detroit Pistons trade up to get LaMelo? Obviously, in order to do that, they have to get in the top three. To be safe, they have to take the first overall pick, but I don't think they have enough firepower ammunition to make that happen. So, Jay, when you look at this, how likely is it really that we see these Pistons kind of buy into all this and work to get up there to get LaMelo Ball?
Well, it's time to do my diva check. let's see. We got rid of Andre Drummond. He was a diva. He had to go. LaMelo Ball and his crazy-ass dad, LaVar. No, thank you. I want my strong, silent, nice glass of water and Obi Toppin. I do not want my Pistons to go grab a ball. Let's stay quiet and humble and try to build something, not get crazy. Because we just talked about divas with Harbaugh. I don't know if that's going to be worth the freight to have him on our team. I want to be quiet. I want to be good.
Okay. Rusty.
So Weaver's actually come out saying that players like 3 to about 13 or 14, he sees in a similar tier. So with that in mind, categorically, I say no. Do not trade up. Do not dare trade up for anyone. If you have that large of a range of players that you're like, pick one, right? It doesn't make a ton of sense. I also just wouldn't trade up for Melo to begin with. Got a wonky shot. He doesn't try on defense. Got great size and a high IQ, sure, but you're probably getting like a third fiddle or backup point guard type of guy with the 7th pick anyways. And probably anywhere after the 2nd pick if you're taking a point guard. So this is the guy you're going to take a chance on? I'd say it's a 0% chance they trade up. I will say the silver lining, though, is clearly LaVar hates Melo if he's saying that he wants him to go to Detroit at 7 or the Knicks at 8 because, A, you have that's child abuse to wish your child to go to the Knicks. Flat out, that's child abuse. Second, neither of those teams are even in the top five. Don't you want your kid to go, like, number one, number two? Like, what are you doing? Why do you hate him? Why does that make me like him more?
Oh, don't do that. No, no, no.
See, for me, it's not even, like, that's the issue here. When I read this and when I think about this, I don't see LaMelo. Like, the talent, whatever you see there, I don't see that. All I see is freaking big baller brand LeVar Ball standing on the sideline at Little Caesars heckling and trying to tell our coach what to do and trying to be best friends with Gore. And it's like, listen, LeVar, tell you what, I'll make the deal. We'll trade up for him. We're going to trade him the second we get him for something, but I'll make that deal. But if for some odd reason he stays in Detroit, you are banned from the arena for life. You are never allowed to come to one of these games because I can't handle you being there. Okay, go hang out with your buddy Michael Jordan, who you apparently would have destroyed on one, in one-on-one basketball.
Yeah, another 0% chance.
Another zero. I just honestly, it's that. The guy could legitimately be the second coming of a point guard. He could be the next great thing. I don't want to deal with his dad. It's just so annoying. It's reached the point where, honestly, one day, and I don't know how they worked this out, but it happened. One day, Stephen A. Smith, Skip Bayless, and LaVar Ball were all on the same program. I genuinely wanted to call and see if we were breaking the laws of a hate crime for letting these people all be on a TV together.
It's actually 2020 is karma for letting that happen.
Yeah.
There we go. I want to ask one, like, 20-second question to my elder NBA statesman, as I'm still dating the league. Have any of the balls panned out? Like, is there
only one
good ball?
There's only one.
Lonzo, yeah.
Lonzo's the only one. Their other brother, yeah. LaAngelo, or
LaAngelo,
went overseas with LaMelo and just hasn't been heard from. He can't get on a team. I think he's either like on the Lakers G League team, but other than that, no, he is not. And I mean, Lonzo, in my opinion, Lonzo is perfect in
he's a player. In
the Pelicans organization, because he, like, in LA, they wanted him to be the guy. They wanted him to go out and be the point guard. They wanted him to be Magic. They wanted him to average a double-double on a team that was not very good. Now he's in the Pelicans, where there are four guys in front of him that are expected to do things. He's really just there to be what he should be, the setup man. Is he going to knock down an occasional jump shot? Absolutely. And he's improved his jump shot, which is kind of nice. But
significantly.
This is Zion's team. This is J.J. Redick's team. I hate this because I always blank on his name, and he's their best freaking player.
Victor Oladipo.
No, shut up. He came over.
Not even on New Orleans.
He came over in the trade with Lonzo. Anyway, but there are other people around him.
Oh, Julius Randle?
No.
No, he moved on too.
Yeah. Russell.
Small,
if you speak again, I hurt you. If you speak again, I hurt you. Russell, find it. There are other people around him that he can be more successful in what he's capable of doing. It's kind of what they're doing with LaMelo. They're going to want LaMelo to be that guy too. LaMelo isn't that guy. He might become a great scorer, but he isn't that guy.
Was it Brandon Ingram?
Brandon Ingram. Thank you. Brandon Ingram is the best player on that team right now. Zion has the potential to be that guy, but it's Brandon Ingram's team doing what he needs to do, Jay.
So then, just to bring it back down to earth, LeVar is just actually being a good dad. He knows his kids suck, and he's just talking too damn much because he's a good father. There's my little positive note of the day. I'm with Russ on this. He's just a good dad.
No. I did not say he's a good dad.
Not a good dad.
He hates his child.
Jay, you got to understand, you can't call a man a good dad. He took his kid out of high school and sent him to, like, Yugoslavia to play basketball because he didn't, or I think it was Lithuania, because he wanted his son to get to the NBA quicker. This isn't developing a child for the betterment of their lives. This is a business move. He made his kids all sign with big baller brand immediately. Like, they don't even have a choice. Like, Nike, Adidas, Under Armour. These places would have gone after Lonzo and given him money. Nope, you're going to stick with me, so every cent you make, you give to me. This is not a good dad. This is just a really good... is a really good attempt at being a promoter. He's
that's
Don
standard
King.
Good dad 101.
I'm going to have to disagree with you, bud.
Yeah, Nora. Nora, Mia, listen, you both have very, very promising careers in sport of your choice.
But, the Mega Marcus brand. Yeah,
but when you get to be 15, I'm going to take you and I'm going to stick you in the like Dominican Republic for 4 years where you're going to play... You're going to play soccer there. But also, the second you come back to get drafted, you have to sign with Bald Man Shoes. Immediately have to sign with me. No options, no endorsements. You have to be on Bald Brand. We'll call it Bald Brand. That's what it is, and it's wrong. Like you are supposed to be there to help your kids when they need help, not create create a company that just lines your pockets with their money. That doesn't sound right. I'm not a dad, Jay. You are, but...
I'm impressed that you hacked into my entrepreneurial plan. I mean, I got to rebrand this whole damn thing now, so thanks for doing that.
How did he even get the Dominican Republic right?
All right, so we're ruling it. The Bald Kid, average dad, not a go... He's a decent dad. He's getting like a number 3 dad mug for Father's Day.
Here's what shocks me about him. His kids all have great... basketball IQ, tremendous as far as like a floor general, right? See the game really well. They all have the weirdest jump shot, and that I assume they got from him. I don't know where they got the IQ from, because he had to do something right to like farm that talent out.
Well, they got the IQ from the fact that they went and played at least Lonzo at one of the premier basketball programs in UCLA. And I agree with you though, Russ, because he has been quoted as saying, "The day I saw Lonzo's shot, I knew I can't touch that. It's perfect. Shooting from here is not perfect."
Yeah. This weird little hitch he had, he's gotten a lot better.
Like at one point, he put it to the side of his head.
Yeah, it's a direct correlation from not being around his father teaching him as much.
Yeah,
honestly.
So, but yeah, Lonzo has panned out. LaMelo still remains to be seen. Honestly, LaMelo's big knock, and I think it's going to be his big knock for a long time. The kid is a beanpole. He's 6'5", but he weighs about 110 pounds. Yeah, Russ's pen is actually a perfect example of what his leg looks like. So he's going to get knocked around. He's going to get knocked around a lot because people are going to realize they can body him, and it's not going to be hard. So we'll see
so
what
his
happens.
Actual measurements are 6'7", 181.
Exactly.
For reference, I'm 5'10", 160, and I'm at a healthy weight range.
Yeah, we're not going to talk.
That
about
seems
it.
Like a mile. That seems like a mile above my head.
Well, it's about a foot and a half taller than you. So yeah, that would be about right.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm putting a stop to this. We've talked about LaVar Ball way too much. At this point, it's just become free branding. As always, I am your host, Eric Dorsch. That is one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you've just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.